Hello, and welcome once again to SD Europe's podcast. My name is Luke Cox, and I lead SD Europe's communications. For those who are new to SD Europe, we are an umbrella organisation representing national supporters organisations, local fan groups, and member-run amateur and professional football clubs. We represent fans across Europe to increase supporter involvement in football clubs and football institutions. You can find out more about SD Europe by visiting our website, which is www.sdeurope.eu. But anyway, that's enough from me. Let's get into this podcast. For today's episode, we turn our attention to the role of supporter directors on football club boards. Supporter directors are where elected representatives of supporters are appointed to football club boards to act as a voice for supporters and a mechanism for transparency. To discuss this, we are joined by Andrew Jenkins of SD Scotland and David Nicol, a former supporter director of St Mirren FC and a former board member of SD Scotland. So, gents, thank you for joining me today.
You're welcome. Thanks very much for having me along, Luke.
Yeah, thanks very much, Luke. Looking forward to it.
Great. Thanks, gents. So before we get into the topic of supporter directors, David, you have to give us an insight into St Mirren recently completing its transition to fan ownership and what this means for, you know, the clubs and the club supporters and the community. A brilliant achievement.
Yeah, fantastic news this week that the Supporters Association, SMISA, has taken the 51% shareholding. So they are now the majority shareholder in the club. The original plan was for that to happen over the course of 10 years from 2016. So we obviously managed to do that a little bit earlier, 5 years earlier. And that's due to a partnership that they formed with a local charity called Kibble. Kibble's a sort of social enterprise involved in helping young people get into work and so on, and education. So that helped us accelerate it, and just really fantastic news this week. And I guess the crucial thing and the reason that we did it right back at the start was it's about safeguarding the future of the club for the long term. We've been fortunate at St Mirren that we've had good boards and good owners for the last few years. The board that we took over from did a great job stabilising the club. But prior to that, there were some shady characters interested in potentially buying the club. And this really puts a line in the sand that that will never be the case at St Mirren now. The people that own it are going to be the fans forever. And that will safeguard the club and put it in the heart of the community.
I mean, it's fantastic, you know, to see another club in Scotland moving in this direction. And just to sort of pedal back a bit, David, could you just sort of briefly introduce yourself? So you were a supporter director at the club and you were a board member of SD Scotland, right?
That's right, yeah. So as I said, the original takeover when SMISA originally sort of embarked on this plan was in 2016. It was a partnership with a guy called Gordon Scott. So he put up the majority of the funding to begin with. SMISA put up, he put up about 2/3 and SMISA put up about 1/3, which was made up of supporters' contributions, members' contributions. And then the plan was over 10 years to buy out Gordon. Obviously, that's happened a little bit earlier. And I was involved in that, in setting that deal up, representing SMISA in the negotiations. And then part of those negotiations was that SMISA would have representation on the board, supporters would have representation at board level. Initially, after the deal was completed, I took that board seat as a place filler, just to, you know, to we had the chance to organise an election. So then around 6 months after that, we had an election of the SMISA members, and I was fortunate enough to win the election and then joined the board. So I joined the board in July 2016, but then was sort of formally elected at the end of 2016. And then, yes, yeah, sat on the board. The plan, again, had been that would be until 2018. At that time, I was asked by the board, we elected another representative onto the board at that time, and the rest of the board said, well, actually, we quite like the input and we quite like what you're bringing to the table. So could you stay on for a bit longer, you know, hand over anything that you're working on? And then what actually happened was that then rolled on a little bit further. And I did mention this. I spoke to Andrew and Alan about this a few years ago, and I said I have no plans to become a kind of dictator role here, where I'm sitting in this seat forever. But it did drag on a little bit longer. And then the deal with Kibble that I mentioned earlier, that came about. And so as part of that deal, Smyser got another additional representative on the board. So again, I was asked, could you just stay in your seat for now until we get the chance to elect that person properly? So so actually, all in all, I stayed on the board until August 2020. So around about 4 years on the club board. And then I was replaced last summer by a guy called John Needham, who just this week has been made chairman of the club. Which is, I think, is a really nice step forward. That at the point at which the fans have taken the majority shareholding in the club, they've also now got a chairman who has come through that route.
Well, I think it's you know, what you talked about there. It's a fantastic example of what this model does, and the fact that, as you say yourself, as a supporter, you've been able to influence your club in a positive way, and now you have a supporter as the chair of the football club, which is just fantastic. And if we just go over to Andrew now. Andrew, can you briefly introduce yourself and your role with SD Scotland as well, please?
Yes, of course. Yeah, so my name's Andrew Jenkin. I was formerly chief executive of supporters throughout Scotland, and now head of the club development consultancy unit that we have at Supporters Throughout Scotland, so working directly with clubs on different pieces of work. And also, just I suppose, in my spare time when I'm not doing that, trying to finish my PhD. So juggling many balls and doing bits of pieces of research in and around the area, and loving it, to be honest.
That's great. And so now, just sort of feeding into, you know, the topic that we wanted to sort of focus on, supporter directors, could you sort of briefly sort of build on what the role is, and then also an introduction to this sort of research paper that you contributed to as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think really, and maybe Dave will be able to back me up on this, but I think the role will sort of vary from club to club, but I think in its kind of simplest form, it's a supporter elected representative, typically from a supporters trust, to serve on the board of their club, and to act primarily as a conduit between the fans and the club itself. They obviously, the skill that they're bringing to that board is the ability to sort of represent fans and sort of put their views across to the club board. But often they might bring their own different skill sets as well, which would help a club that might have kind of limited resources and aren't able to pay to have directors. And, you know, how that position on a board comes about has sort of really varied from club to club in Scotland. So you have the example of Smyser, which I'm sure Dave could talk through, but you've also got supported trust like Kilmarnock buying a place on the board, so sort of physically handing over cash to have a place on the board, or Hibs have given a place on the board for free, and some have kind of resisted it sort of to the hills and sort of wouldn't really ever kind of consider the idea of having a supporter on the board. So you kind of had this kind of mix of different situations really where fans have become positioned on the board. So yeah, they you know, their main role is really to represent the fans, act as that conduit, and of course they also have a kind of legal duty as well now as a director of a different company.
Great. So after sort of introducing it there, what would you say are sort of the, you know, one or two key benefits for clubs and for supporters of having a supporter director or multiple in some cases at some clubs, of course? If we go to Andrew first and then to David.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for the fans, it's the ability to kind of get a point of view across and to sort of be assured that there is a mechanism there that ensures that they're being represented and their views are being heard by the people that ultimately make the decisions. But I think for the club, we've got lots of research at Supporters Direct that kind of backs up that there's a huge amount of benefits for the club for choosing to engage with fans in this way as well. So just having enhanced trust with the fans is good. When you've got trust, you can bring in additional revenue and income streams as well. So there's kind of financial benefit there as well. For fans, being able to get kind of issues and priorities higher up the agenda, issues like, you know, racism, for example, or equal opportunities, equal access. And it's really just about building that bridge and sort of bringing the two onto the same page. I think that's the way I would see it. Perhaps in practice, I feel like a bit of a fraud because I've never actually done the role, unlike Dave. So maybe he'll be able to explain a bit better.
No, I think you covered a lot of it well there, Andrew. And you know, certainly in my time as a sporting director, it was always useful to have guys like Andrew and Alan Russell at Sporting Direct Scotland to chat things through. But I think that, you know, a couple of things you said there are spot on about being a conduit, about being that bridge between the support and the boardroom. I think that's, you know, that's important. Of course, what you can contribute and what you can bring will vary depending on the individual, but also I think it varies depending on the board that you're sitting in. Some boards will be more receptive to the idea. Others, as you say, Andrew, push back against that. And you know, you might be in a situation where you have a supporter director on the board, but the board aren't particularly happy about that. So supporters directors, depending on the board that you're in, will find themselves in different situations. But I think you've got a couple of responsibilities there. Of course, you've got your fiduciary duties, so you've got to do what's in the best interest of the club, the company, all the time. That's a legal responsibility. But I think we've also got a kind of wider responsibility to contribute constructively to the board. It would be very easy to go in and start kind of banging your fist on the table and saying, we need to do better about this, and we need to lower ticket prices, and we need to make the shirts cheaper, and all of these things. But if very quickly, if you're only presenting that perspective, very quickly the board are going to say, okay, that's fine, we've got that view, but it's not, doesn't really help us do anything. So I think you've got to try and show that fans can be taken seriously and that they understand that the operation of the club is not always black and white, and sometimes boards have to take unpopular decisions. So I think that the supporters director role in that situation is to put forward how is this going to impact the fans positively and negatively, and the board might still take the unpleasant decision or the decision that's the unpopular decision, but the fans perspective will have been considered before they do that, and they'll know, okay, this is, you know, maybe worth X pounds, but here's the damage it's going to do in terms of our relationship with the fans. So I think that's really the key things, yeah, as Andrew says, you know, being that conduit, being that bridge, and being a constructive contributor to a board are really important. The other thing I think that fan directors can bring that maybe sometimes gets missed is about maybe a bit more of a kind of long-term perspective. You know, although I was on the board for 4 years, you've been a St Mirren fan for my whole life, we'll continue to be a St Mirren fan after I've stepped off the board, we'll continue to be a season ticket holder. So my input is not necessarily going to be what's good for the next 6 months or what's good for the next season, but it's, you know, what's good for my football team. And I think, you know, sometimes St Mirren have been very fortunate in that, you know, all of our directors stretching back, you know, certainly as long as I can remember, have been St Mirren fans. That's been their, so we've always been, you know, fan owned in a way, because it's been fans that own it, but not in a democratic way necessarily. So they would have had that long term view as well, I guess. But sometimes you can get sucked into short termism. So having that fan view on the board, I think, can also help. And you have that kind of unique perspective on things, I think, sometimes. Directors, certainly at football clubs like St Mirren, tend to come from small business backgrounds, local businesses, and so on. So sometimes you kind of get a bit of groupthink where everybody in the room has kind of done a very similar job or had a very similar business experience. And if you bring in somebody, a sporting director, then sometimes you just bring in that different perspective and that different way of looking at things, which can be a real bonus.
Yeah, I think it's interesting what you say there about, you know, making sure that the supporters' sort of views are heard and making sure that, you know, the rest of the board know that, and, you know, to sort of draw it up to the European level. You wonder back at the start of the year when there was the whole European Super League situation, if a few of those clubs had supporters, supporter directors on those boards, they might have said to the rest of the board, are we sure about this, guys? Do we want to just take another look? Yeah. But no, yeah, this, the next thing I wanted to ask about, and perhaps actually if we go to David first on this, you know, in your experience, maybe to begin with, were there any challenges or, you know, hurdles that you had to sort of negotiate around, or maybe things that you might have heard from colleagues at other clubs?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of challenges. It's a difficult role in some senses. It's, of course, a privileged role. And it, you know, it was being on the board is great fun. You're involved in the working of your football club. And I was never a very good footballer, so I was never going to play for St Mirren. So being able to get involved off the field was a real privilege. But for sure, it's a difficult role. You know, you're often having to be a diplomat because you're trying to kind of walk the line between the supporters and the boardroom, and you're trying to make sure both sides understand where the other is coming from if there's ever a dispute. So that takes a kind of unique set of skills, I think, to be able to do that effectively, and to help. You know, football clubs are successful when the fans are and the board are pulling in the same direction. I think that's fair to say. So you need to try and take people along with you and ensure that the fans understand if a board makes an unpopular decision, and also make, you know, just as you mentioned there, look, you know, making sure that the board don't take decisions that are so ridiculously unpopular, like the Super League or something like that, that they're going to lose fans and they're going to lose the goodwill and the engagement of fans. So that's definitely a challenge. I think confidentiality is something that's always difficult. As a supporter director, you want to inform the fans, you want to tell them what's happening at the club, you want to give them updates and information, but at the same time, of course, there's commercial confidentiality in a lot of what the club's doing. There's sensitivity around some information, so you've got to be really careful about you know, what information you can and can't share, and that's difficult as well. You know, if you know, hey, we're talking to such and such a player, and that's going to be really exciting, you know, but talking about things like that can jeopardize the deal. So that's one thing, you know, and then you kind of put your sensible hat on and say, okay, you know, they'll find out about it if and when it happens. But more generally, I think, you know, if it's you know, commercial partnerships and things like that the club has entered into, and people, you want to share a little bit of information, but you can't necessarily share everything. And the other, I guess, challenge that I think is worth mentioning is there's still a little bit of and this is specific, I guess, to clubs that are fan-owned, as well as having fan representatives on the board, is about getting across about fan-owned and not fan-run, and being able to help the support understand that they are different things. And fan-owned is about safeguarding the future of the club and long-term stability and all of those really important things. But day-to-day, you don't want to be in a situation where the fans are voting on who's playing left-back or, You know, should we sack the manager? And I think, to be fair, I think that's something that fans are generally aware of. You know, social media is one thing, and you will get that a little bit in social media. But in my 4 years on the board, I never got a single email saying we should sack the manager. I never got a single email saying, you know, oh, why are we playing such and such a player, or why did we sign such and such a player? So I think fans generally get, okay, your role is about long term, it's about strategy, it's not about, you know, things that happen day to day, and that there are people at the club working there who that's their job, and that's what they're there to do. Just mentioning on social media, that was probably one of the bigger challenges, I would say, because you have got that access and you're trying to share information and you want people to talk to you. Sometimes that can be tough. You know, you do need a little bit of a thick skin sometimes. There are people who come and, you know, they'll be making complaints, and, you know, sometimes people forget that you're doing this and you're often as a volunteer. It's your spare time. So you just need to take it on the chin. It goes with the territory a lot of the time. But that's a challenge. And it's something I would say, if there's anybody who is joining a board or is thinking about it, that's something just to be aware of. That make sure you give yourself breaks from social media, especially when things aren't going well. Go on, engage, talk to people, but also give yourself time away. Otherwise, it will drive you mad. So I would say they're the biggest challenges.
Great, thanks, David. And I think you know, in the middle of that, you pointed something out quite important there, sort of that difference between being fan owned and fan run, because we're all aware of there's been a few sort of infamous projects over the years of, you know, people trying to do these, you know, what was the first one? Was it My Club? I can't remember what it was
My Football Club.
That was it. Well, you know, when they sort of vote on the striker each week. And then, you know, it's interesting because then you have the distinction, you know, across Europe, you know, the sort of term that they use is member run. And that is more about, you know, particularly at the semi-pro and grassroots level, where you do have members helping to run the club, but in an operational point of view, sort of involuntary capacities, if it's media stuff, it's never anything to do with the coaching. But I think it's important, you know, that distinction that you make there. So now if we go back to Andrew, perhaps are there, you know, from your research or from, you know, obviously your involvement with SD Scotland, any sort of challenges or, you know, slaloms that you've come across that supporter directors might sort of have to negotiate with?
Yeah, I think well, obviously the first hurdle is actually getting to that position where you've almost got the club to agree to it. In some sort of situations, unfortunately, there's still some clubs that I alluded to that haven't really got to that stage where they've been able to get to that part of the process, really. So they're still not represented within those structures, and lots of clubs are very resistant to the idea, and perhaps will opt for something else that perhaps is a bit short of having a fan on the board. Supporter liaison officers are obviously fantastic, but you know, still something is still a bit short from having a fan on the board. But you know, assuming a club's got that far and now have their director on the board, I think there could be a couple of issues and a couple of things that we've come across. One is having just the one director on the board, and actually there's a risk that they can, well, simply be outvoted, which is one thing. But I suppose something sort of a bit more subtler than that, which is not having that kind of backup within the boardroom situation, not having that kind of second person to be able to rely on. You know, perhaps there's a conversation that's happened and they need somebody to sort of vouch and say that this has happened, having somebody to actually say, yes, that did happen. You know, I know that sounds quite silly. So just having two is always better than one, I would say, in the first instance. I think, as Dave said, confidentiality is the biggest one. I think there's a lot of skepticism that if you have a fan on the board, you're going to be, you know, the transfer budget is going to be on Twitter the next week or something, or who the star striker and the signing will be. So it's, I suppose, just trying to get across that trust, really. And one of the things we talk about in the research is getting buy-in. So developing this kind of buy-in from the other directors that you're a reliable, dependable person that you can. I think there's so much, it's man management skills, really. It's sort of interpersonal social skills, which is the real critical factor in the role. And just being able to balance all of these things, you know, the club need to know that the person isn't going to go and shout about the transfer budget, as I say. But they also need to be able to let them disclose some information as well. So everyone needs to agree on what information is going to be shared. Otherwise, the role is redundant if no one's going to buy into it. So I think there's a few things in that sense. And you can do some things to address that as well. Having a kind of a code of conduct and a job description role as well that everyone's comfortable with, and certain parameters of the role are kind of identified as well. Yeah, I think they'd be the main challenges, really.
I think that's it. You know, you said something there, and actually it's, you know, by no coincidence, very similar to what obviously your colleague Alan, CEO of SD Scotland, said when we did an interview with him the other month. A lot of it is about just sort of breaking through that barrier and showing that, you know, supporters actually do have a lot of credibility, lots of supporters. And it feeds into what David was saying earlier. You know, in some instances, supporter directors actually have a skill set that they can offer a club, you know, if it's, you know, legal or marketing or whatever, they can actually help to push things forwards. And, you know, it's almost, you know, showing that, you know, supporters in a boardroom doesn't mean that they're going to sit there and set flares off on, you know, banging drums. They've actually got quite a good contribution to make. But no, yeah, thank you. That's great, Andrew. So moving forwards a little bit from there, Andrew, sort of coming back to you again, just to sort of try and touch on your research a little bit more, what were the sort of key conclusions or, you know, takeaways that you and your sort of fellow researchers had from this paper?
I think the sort of main takeaway was this kind of concept of buy-in, really. And we used those, without trying to get too academic, we tried to use social exchange theory, which is basically bringing something to the board seeing that the fan representative has brought something to board, whether that be they've got the ability to represent people on a unique sort of perspective on a lot of issues that will help the board in decision making, or whether it's kind of a skill set. And I know lots of clubs have been very fortunate to benefit from huge skill sets, as we've kind of spoken about already. But sort of bringing something to the board and then buying into that and seeing the value that they're bringing. That was really the kind of key thing that we noticed. The directors that are able to successfully navigate that are the most successful ones, really. So they're the ones that are able to bring something, the club are able to benefit, and the fans are able to benefit as well, because they're sort of being that bridge, so to speak. So I think that was the kind of key conclusion, really, is this concept of buy-in. And as you say, a lot of that will come down to social skills and man management.
Great. So we're on to the final question now. So you're almost free. So where I wanted to sort of take this to for the last question is, you know, since the whole European Super League back at the start of the year, there are a lot of things talked about, you know, among supporters, journalists, those in the industry about, you know, what remedies could be put in place to, you know, try and prevent something like this happening again. You know, of course, there was a lot of noise about 50+1 and other sort of ownership structures. And one thing that was sort of quietly spoken about as well was supporter directors. And, you know, one thing that SD Europe has had conversations about with its members across Europe is about whether, sort of similar to supporter liaison officers, under the right circumstances, supporter directors should almost be compulsory under competition licensing. So if a club wants to compete in the Champions League, say, they have to have a supporter director. And it'd be really interesting just to get, you know, both of your takes on this. So perhaps if we go to David first.
I mean, I think it's definitely worth consideration. I think I would be cautious about it. I think Andrew made a really good point there about buy-in. And I think if you try to force this on clubs, you'll struggle to get some of that buy-in. If clubs feel this is something that's being done to them, then they'll find ways to work around it. It'll become a figurehead role, but it won't have any influence on it, because the club will say, well, yeah, okay, that person's there as a sporting director. We need to invite them to a meeting once a month. But the rest of us will have our chat or our own WhatsApp group and our own chat, and we'll do the real decisions and you'll get cut out. So I think there is some merit in the idea, but I would be cautious about how it was implemented to make sure, you know, you didn't end up in that situation. I think where it will be most successful and where supporters directors are most successful is definitely in circumstances where the board is welcoming of it and where they're accepting of the idea. So if you did mandate it, you could find the situation where you get boards or push back against it. So I mean, I think what might be a compromise, or certainly something that could be bridge some of that gap, would be tying it to a certain amount of shareholding or ownership structure of the club. And I appreciate that's a bigger challenge because of all the different structures and models. And I know Andrew did some really excellent work on that a couple of years ago, which was really fascinating when you see how all the different clubs are set up and how they're all owned. But I think if you made it hand in hand with, okay, we want supporters trusts or supporters associations to have a certain amount of ownership of their club, even if that's a minority stake, and in partnership with that, they get some board level representation, then I think it would help, football club boards accept the role more readily, rather than saying, okay, if you want to compete in Europe or you want to get a license from the FA or the SFA, then you need to have this role. that could maybe backfire a little bit, I think.
And then Andrew?
Yeah, I think not for the first time today. I'd have to 100% agree with David, actually. I think there is, I mean, we had as David said, with the supporter liaison officer role, you know, at the very start of its kind of rollout in Scotland, you had a lot of clubs that were maybe at the start resistant to the idea. So they would just, you know, a tick box exercise and appoint somebody within the club that was going to be the SLO, but there wasn't any sort of training. There wasn't a job description. They didn't really have any impact. So I think, you know, you can force a club to try and do something, but, and I know exactly Dave's example there. I know there have been clubs that have just had meetings before they've had their actual meeting or their, you know, it's one of those situations where if they don't want to do it, they will find a way around it. So there has to be a bit of recognition from the club or acknowledgement from the club that they actually have to want to do it in the first place, motivation from the club to actually want to do it in the first place. And actually, if they didn't want to do it in the first place and they were forced upon it, it wouldn't be much point to the supporter role anyway, the director role anyway, because they wouldn't be able to share any information. It would sort of be ineffective. So there could be other ways that they could try and gain representation for a supporters trust. So they could start having kind of structured dialogue meetings, maybe quarterly with an agreed agenda of the issues that they want to discuss. Or as David says, buying shares and sort of just doing it incrementally over time. So there, you know, there are other ways to go about it, but it is very difficult to sort of mandate it, unfortunately, regardless of sort of how good I think we think it would all be for kind of Scottish football or football across the UK, really. So yes, it's not without its challenges, but something certainly that would be positive, I feel.
I think it also just to add to that, Andrew, I think you know, supporters directors in the clubs that do have them have a bit of a responsibility there as well to show, oh, actually this is a useful thing and this can work and this can be helpful and it can be contributory to making the club better, so that those other clubs who are maybe a bit reluctant will say, oh, okay, well, it seems to be working at St Mirren or Motherwell or Kilmarnock or whoever. Maybe we should be a little bit interested in this. Maybe there is something in this. And that hopefully over time changes a little bit the perception of supporters directors at some clubs. At some clubs, that's already there. You know, that they're already seen that way as a good addition to the board. But at those that don't see it yet, I think that those of us who have been in the role or are currently in the role have got that responsibility to show that it can add value.
That's it. I think, you know, going back to the, you know, the question, it was under the right circumstances, and I think you're both absolutely spot on. It's about, if that buy-in's there, then you almost don't need to have to sort of enforce it, because they'll be going out of their way to do it. And then in that situation, you're way more likely for that role to be fulfilled to its maximum potential. And again, you know, I think back to when I spoke to Alan, your colleague, the other month. You know, we were talking about the whole sort of structured transition in Scotland of, you know, clubs working towards fan ownership, owners, you know, and supporters together. And he was saying about how, you know, often, you know, the sort of the wheels start turning when, you know, at matches, boards, you know, directors are talking to each other, and, you know, a club that's privately owned might be talking to a club that's on its way to being fan owned, and they start to think, actually, this is quite a good idea to safeguard our, you know, long term future. And it does make you think, perhaps then, you know, there's work to do, like David said, about existing, you know, supporter directors, almost like peer to peer learning, you know, explaining, actually, this has worked out really well for us. It's given us this much better perspective, you know, on what our supporters want, and they feel a lot closer to the club. So, yeah, I think, you know, thank you both, gents. As I said, that was my final question. Your contributions have been fantastic. I'm sure everyone listening will agree with me when I say thank you for your time. And David, I must say, you know, again, a massive congratulations to you and all your colleagues and fellow supporters at St Mirren on this achievement, you know, from all of us at SD Europe.
Thank
you, gents. That was brilliant.
Great.
Thanks very much, Luke. Cheers. Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much for listening to this podcast. If you enjoyed it, you'll be happy to hear that we've already recorded a number of other podcasts this year. We spoke to the president of St. Pauli back in January, and we also did an International Women's Day special with a number of people from SD Europe and the network. And that's just to mention two podcasts. And if you'd like to find out more about SD Europe, please head to our website, which is www.sdeurope.eu. Thanks.